Why are police photographing our license plates?
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
Welcome to the Reasonable Voice radio show. I'm your host, Marcello Rolando, The Reasonable Voice. The mission of The Reasonable Voice is to connect the dots between politics and finance, the need for better and more affordable education, our humanity, world peace, and of course, the arts, which we then gladly provide our listeners, the voting public, as informative food for thought to provoke their self-determination and appetite for equal economic opportunity and justice for all without truth decay. The Reasonable Voices are advocates prioritizing education, preserving our history, leading by example for a peaceful and prosperous world by evoking and embracing both creative artists and political unity as solutions to our challenges. Hello and welcome to the Reasonable Voices News Talk Radio program. I'm your host, Marcello Rolando, The Reasonable Voice, and our Reasonable Voice today is my good friend, producer, director, marketing and public relations executive, entrepreneur, and educator, Jay Michaels, returning to The Reasonable Voices to update, uplift, and inspire us with his ever-increasing contribution to the arts, theater, film, and the artists of every discipline. Welcome back, Jay. How are you today?
I'm blushing at that wonderful introduction. Oh, my goodness. I hope I'm worthy of it. Thank you so much.
Well, you better get it.
I'm great. I'm better now that I've been introduced by you.
Well, that's only the beginning. I just didn't want you to have to wait to hear my welcome. But here we go. Before we hear from Jay, allow me to share with you a modicum of his contributions and accomplishments in the arts. Jay Michaels is a producer executive with a specialty in communications and promotion. He has been a part of the independent theater and film movement since 1977 and was part of Lincoln Center's tribute to Cafe Chino and the original Off-Off-Broadway movement in 1985. Before becoming an entrepreneur, Jay worked as an actor, stage and film, and director off-Broadway for many years, garnering accolades for helming new plays and musicals and a wildly successful series of Shakespeare. Mr. Michaels served as a national tour manager for Les Miserables, Cats, Oliver, Edwin Drood, and a production associate at PBS for the special series Increase the Peace. His career as an executive in charge of promotion and marketing began on Broadway with Guys and Dolls in 1992, a production, by the way, I saw, and continued with Damn Yankees, 1994, The Vagina Monologues, 2005, and recently with Beginnings in 2017. J. Michaels has served on the promotional staff for The Daily News, producing events at Lincoln Center, Madison Square Garden, and Atlantic City. And that's not the half of it. Jay Michaels' communication channel, I, creating visibility for independent theater, film, music, and literature, has been the battle cry of his boutique promotion and production firm for more than 20 years. And that, I assure you, our listeners today, is a heavily edited version of the accomplishments of this Renaissance man who is our guest today, Dr. Jay Michaels. So, Jay Michaels, welcome back to the Reasonable Voices News Talk Radio Show, and how are you and your genius brain this gorgeous, glorious day?
Listening to my bio, no wonder I'm exhausted most of the time. I'm great. I'm really great. I love being busy, as one can imagine.
Yes.
And for so many different reasons, I'm a junkie in terms of new art, new culture, new interests, and so I'm as the expression goes, I'm dancing as fast as I can over many projects these days.
I appreciate that about you, because
I also feel it is so much better to be busy doing what you love doing. I mean, most of us know or are aware of what happened to Broadway during COVID, but what happened to indie theater on off-Broadway and off-off-Broadway, we don't know so much about. Can you tell us about that, and where are we with that?
It was really interesting. I'm glad you said that. When we all went into lockdown, I had an epiphany, and I think I was not alone. At one point, the Actors Fund did this really fabulous, I used the antiquated word telethon for the actors on Broadway, because obviously everything was closing. And so there everyone was on Zoom. We're all watching it on our computers. And it seemed to me that the playing field, at least at this juncture, was leveled. The same actor that was once 10 feet high on Broadway is now in his basement playing guitar, no different than the actor fresh out of conservatory hoping to get his first gig. And it occurred to me that now we are all simply actors. It's not a matter of saying who's a celebrity or not. We are all, once again, simply artists. And I think off and off Broadway, I won't say profited, I'll say they were able to be ingenuitous enough to stay alive. The plethora of Zoom performances hit us. I had so many clients who called me and said, "Okay, well, I'm doing A Doll's House. I'm doing Tennessee Williams, but we're doing it on Zoom. I'm doing my new play, and we're going to do it on StreamYard." Off and off Broadway, like they've always done, because they've had to be ingenuitous.
Yes,
they simply took to the screen, and so now we had all of these accessible opportunities to see some really amazing work right there on our computer screens. I think it kept a lot of actors going, and it gave actors a really strong chance, because now you could do 2, 3, 4 different kinds of readings in the time it would take to do one. So I think it gave a lot of opportunity to actors. I see now, as we're, and I'm going to say this is really the first year that we're doing it, we're coming out of the pandemic.
Yes.
We've been coming out of it for like a year and a half or
exactly.
more now, but this is now really coming out. And I see so many new names. I see so many new plays, so many new opportunities. I think off and off Broadway, do we suffer? Oh, hell yeah. But I think we swam a little harder than most. And I think we're profiting from it now.
I agree with you. And I think that optimism is honest. I'm wondering, though, are indie films being priced out of existence, or can we do this in films as well as theater on Zoom?
For sure. For sure. There are a lot of indie films that, again, they were hoping for film festivals before the pandemic. And then film festivals went virtual. I was part of two really marvelous film festivals, one in Arizona, one in Boston, that they were fearing closing, but no, they started channels. They said, okay, we have to be online. We can't have people in our theater anymore. Okay. And they went online and they created channels. And so a lot of indie films that would not have been chosen because there was just so much room in a limited film festival now could be on their channel and run. There are a lot of indie films that finally got a life. Like if I wanted to be nihilistic, then I could say, okay, well, they got an opportunity, but it was a brief opportunity. But if nothing else, they got the opportunity.
Yes.
A lot of films got a chance to be seen online. And even people with entrepreneurial spirits, it was great because they then started their own channel. They put on YouTube their films.
Yes.
So I think everyone said, okay, I can't go out, so I have my computer. Here's my movie.
Exactly.
And so even indie film, we got a lot of opportunities going.
Yes. Excellent. You know, and streaming came out of that. Streaming's a whole new thing. And I directed my first show on Zoom only because of COVID. Everyone was catching COVID. So we went back to Zoom. We had been on the stage. You know, after everyone was healthy, we went back on the stage and they retained everything. That was my great joy to discover. I would tell them, you know, of course, everybody who's been on Zoom knows you're sitting at home alone with your computer. And I would say to the cast member, indicate to me by looking in the direction that you think I want you to go at that point. And they did that. That's what they did as a solo in their home. And yet when we returned to the stage, it was all there. So my hat off to all the actors I've ever worked with, because we've all gone through so much. I wonder, though, How do the independent unknown theater and film artists make a sort of universe? I think maybe you've answered that question. Is how do they do that on their own? Or can they do it on their own? Seems like you said they did.
Technology helps again. You know, the pandemic made those people in technology panic as well. And so they, I hear now people are making movies with their iPhones.
I know.
I just spoke to a filmmaker yesterday, and I was asking him, because I wanted him to film a project of mine, and I said, how do you get the cameras into the theater and whatever? And he said, oh, well, you position your iPhones on this part and then this part. I'm like,
yes.
What? Yes, we'll have four iPhones going. And it blew my mind.
Yes.
I think technology itself has said, okay, what are we going to do? We can't leave our homes, so what do we do? And technology is downright science fiction these days. So anyone can make a film if they have a really good phone.
That's right.
And it blows my mind, but that's great. Oh, my gosh, what the industry is going to look like very soon is incredible.
Yes, I agree. And I watched that first with a little trepidation, but then I went, you know, I love learning new things. Just get the young people around you who are doing this and then learn and do it. And
yeah.
It's just fabulous. It also helps, I think, something that happened when we were all alone, it seems to me, with COVID, that sort of accelerated the best and worst, in some cases, of Americans. But we became more aware of multifaceted, multicultural, multimedia art. But we see now in everything that we see, it's certainly multiracial and cultural. Examples that something has changed. I don't know how much COVID or being alone made that happen, but what are your thoughts?
We've seen this many times before. If we look at movies about World War II, everything's very patriotic and everyone's very clean. If we look at movies about Vietnam, it is quite the contrary.
Mm-hmm.
Because we finally got footage, we finally got pictures ahead of time, and we could see the devastations of war.
Yes.
I think we're getting that now. The fact that we can click on our box and see people across the world immediately.
Mm.
We're seeing people that it sounds funny to say this, people we never knew existed.
Yes.
We see cultures, we see humanity that we didn't know was there. And we're getting to know them, and we're really seeing the similarities, not the differences,
yes.
But the similarities.
Yes.
I think that's really been a help, if you will, during this pandemic. We look and we say, okay, we're the same people. We're all suffering the same way.
Yes.
That's the dubious thing about this pandemic. It didn't decide. There are certain ethnicities, there are certain cultures that suffered more from it because of health issues, because of economic issues. But in general, COVID was going to get you, period.
Mm-hmm.
And that really made us look at everyone and say, okay, well, you're as fragile as I am, and that means I'm as fragile as you are.
Yes.
And it really brought a sense of community together. I think the fact that we are looking at a much more multicultural world is because, whether by force or by discovery, we're saying, you know, we're all suffering the same way, so why don't we just get along
and help each other as we go, because as you say, we're all in the same boat and we're finally realizing it.
Exactly.
I wonder, I need to just check on the clock a second. Oh, no, we're fine. A couple of minutes and then we'll take a break. But how does an unknown artist, and I'll tell you why I'm asking all these unknowns. First of all, because our guest knows about this. But secondly, because I am inundated lately with playwrights. I've always had playwrights, mostly not known or not published at least, who come to me because I've always loved directing and developing new plays, new playwrights. And you know, you get a reputation from that. Well, call Marcello, he'll do it, that sort of thing. But I'm, yes, and I know you laugh and I know you know very well. But I wonder, how does an unknown artist, even one with a good resume, I've seen good resumes and good plays, and they're still coming to me for the magic wand. How do they get interviews and listings and articles written about them and their work? I mean, that's your line of business, yes.
There's two ways of doing it. There's doing it yourself. As easy as it is to open up a Facebook account is as easy as it is to publicize yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone can do that. And pardon me if I sound commercial, but there's one thing that hasn't changed, and that's if something looks like a vanity project. The problem with doing it yourself, as much as it's the easiest thing in the world, when you do it yourself, then whoever you're speaking to can question your professionalism. Mm. I know it sounds so funny to say this. Brilliant artists saying, please come see my play.
Yes.
Sound the same as someone fresh out of school who's never written anything saying, come see my play.
Yes.
The smart artists find allies. Humility makes me say allies. If I want to speak commercial, they find their press rep. They find their manager. They find their director, their producer. Brilliant people look for allies. It's great to publicize your work. It's better for a group to publicize your work.
Yes.
So I've seen a lot of people start their own theater companies. A lot of people have associates. Suddenly they have co-writers. They have a director, as in your case, that they always want to work with. Mm. They have people that they could say, me and somebody else are doing the show, and there's the strength in numbers.
Yes.
And when they can, they say, okay, call my rep about this. I always tell people, even if you don't use me, I'm brilliant and I'm cheap, but nonetheless, even if you don't use me, get somebody else to make your phone calls. Get a team behind you so that there's strength in numbers and so there's other voices. And on a business level, that's the best way to be, because, like I say, you need allies to help you do this. You can't, you and I both come from the same school of we can get too exhausted doing things ourselves.
Yes, yes.
So that's number one. And also creatively, you know, when you're in a vacuum, you know, yes, your work is the best work you've ever heard in your entire life. Now what happens when you give it to a stranger? I just had an argument with someone about a play because I said, it's great, but here's what you need to fix it. And they thought, fix it? What do you mean, fix it?
I've heard that one too.
Yeah, they have been in a vacuum with it. They can't imagine anything needed to be fixed. So I think creatively, to have another voice allows you to see another opinion. As we're talking about this becoming a multicultural world, we may not know what would make our play more accessible. Just one other voice might do it.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of business, community, have these people to help you do what you're doing. Don't exhaust yourself. I don't know how many great artists have burnt themselves out because they were a one-man band.
Yes.
So get the people to help you so that your art has objectivity and you can conserve your strength.
That's an excellent upbeat moment to end our first segment. We're going to take a short break. Don't go away, anyone. This is with so much more to come. This is the fabulous Dr. J. Michaels. We may even have him ask him why he's a doctor and how is he a doctor. Who knows? We've got so much to talk about that we haven't talked about yet, so stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hello, I'm Sue Friedman, former president and CEO of the Alzheimer's Association Central and Western Virginia chapter, and currently the executive director of the Jefferson School Foundation, which owns and manages the Jefferson School City Center in Charlottesville, Virginia. In both positions, I have wisely chosen to employ Marcello Rolando's talents and gifts as advisor, consultant for projects involving our boards, membership supporters, and our larger circle of extended associates. In every case, his advice has proven to be sound, clear, and actionable. In addition, as an on-camera director and teacher, he has directed and produced a number of publicity, marketing, and branding videos, and doing so has proven his expertise in working with professionally experienced video production crews, as well as his uncanny ability and patience when working with a non-actor, performer, spokesperson to produce the most favorable branding products. After the production completes filming, his keen, detail-oriented director's eye guides editors on his team to an informative and emotionally impactful finished product. If you need more to engage this talented professional, let me add that I, like many, have been a guest on Marcello's podcast, The Reasonable Voices, with exceptional results. Thank you for this opportunity. This is Sue Friedman encouraging you to contact Marcello Rolando.
Welcome back to the Reasonable Voices News Talk Radio program. I'm your host, Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, and our guest today is Dr. J. Michaels. And I hope you caught the introduction in the first segment because it's too long to go through again. But Jay is still with us, and we've talked about so many things, and I just wonder, well, first of all, because I'm calling you Dr. J. Michaels, tell us about that.
Well, full disclosure, I'm completing my doctorate as we're speaking. This, my whole career has been tripping and falling over another aspect of it, and this was definitely part of it. Over 20 years ago, I'd always been teaching and lecturing, but it usually was at art schools, it was at various events and other such things. About 20 years ago, beginning, 2002 actually, a colleague of my wife's had an opening for a professor at a university, and he initially asked my wife, but at that point her schedule was very busy, and so he said, would you be interested? And I thought, what a goof, why don't I do that? Why don't I teach one semester somewhere at a college? How interesting this would be. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, then it'll be over and I'll put it on my resume. How much fun can it be? I adored it. Mm. It was absolutely wonderful. The concept of sharing my knowledge with the next generation, the concept of taking even information that I thought nobody would care about and give it to others and watch them blossom from it, it became absolutely intoxicating. And let's just say I stayed. I'm now a professor at three different universities.
Wow.
And I teach theater, I teach speech, communications, media culture, and I'm starting to teach public relations and marketing next month. During these 20 years, I've been told that you need this licensing to do it, you need this degree to do it. And so I eventually, after 30 years of just having a bachelor's, now I got my master's, I've gotten various certifications. I'm now on the board of directors of two other universities, mm-hmm. and I'm on the board of directors of the CUNY League for Speech Professors, and now I'm completing my doctorate. So soon I am going to be Dr. J.
Hey, I love it. Dr. J. That's good. Well, you put in the work, that's for certain, and it's still going on, and I know a lot of lives are being positively impacted because of it. So good for you, and congratulations in advance.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
All right, back to some of the things you are doing still. How does one develop a theater or a film audience? I always get these things from Indeed that, you know, saying, offering me or suggesting I apply to be a director of development. Now, I know what that is, and I know what I do, and I always want to write Indeed and go, what makes you think I could be a director of development? Do you not know what that is? Tell us the challenge of that.
The bottom line, and when you're looking at it in terms of indie art, or actually even corporate, it's almost the same thing. Mm. The first thing is to figure out your audience,
yes.
is to figure out what audience you want. We're so big to say, oh, people should come see my show. Which people exactly? Mm-hmm. Who is going to profit from your show? As I said about my becoming a professor, I couldn't be a math professor because I don't have that skill, and the math department certainly couldn't utilize it. But the audience that I would best suit is obviously communications and theater. And even in that sense, it was theater at the beginning. And then they said, well, you speak well, you understand this, so why don't you now work with the communications department? Okay, mm-hmm. you work in film, so why don't you work with the media department?
Mm-hmm.
The first thing in terms of development is, who is your audience?
Yes.
Who do you want to see your show? Who will be influenced by your product, whether it's a show, a company, etc.? And there are professionals, there are directors of development who do surveys, who do interviews, who do demographic searches, who look at analytics, who basically say, okay, who's buying your product? And then they do cross-referencing. Okay, everyone who collects this would also be interested in yours. Everyone who enjoys this sport would be interested in this product.
Mm.
They create, in some cases, a very vast audience,
yes.
that would be interested in your subject. We see little versions of it, like when we watch Netflix. At the end of the movie, we see little boxes on the bottom that says, people who watch this movie also watched.
Yes.
And they give us other examples.
Yes.
The director of development extensively finds that audience that will profit from your message, your product, and then woo them in there. And then they find out what will woo them. Will it be discounts? Is it subject matter? Is it certain artists? Is it certain time frames? We no longer have the prime time notion of seeing something 8 o'clock at night or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So they look at the various things that's going to make individuals attend your show or turn on the television or go to your store.
Mm-hmm.
So Billy, a director of development, finds who will love your product, when they're going to love it, and what they need to give them to love your product.
Well, the more you answer that, the more I'm convinced that people need someone like you as opposed to trying to go it alone. And I guess I have done, I guess I owe indeed an apology, because I have done things like that, mostly not so much as a career choice, but within my career as a director and writer and actor and all that. Sometimes you work in a situation where somebody needs to do that and nobody is doing it. And so regardless of the hat I was wearing, I would step in and do that, but certainly not on a consistent level as you would do. But I greatly appreciate that explanation for our listening audience, because I know you do this too. You people come to you and they want to see their work done, and that's where they stop there, because they think telling you that is all they need to do, and there's just so much more to it. And you've just done it so succinctly, so I'll stop talking and ask you something else. I know you have a peer advisory team. Tell me how they work and how they work with people who probably could need a peer advisory team.
My peer advisory, essentially, it is developmental in the same way. I have writers, I have managers, I have individuals that work with various productions as to what they need. I have designers that work with me, and I also support peer review sites. I have about now, I think it's about a dozen sites that have broken up into different things. They review playwrights, they review films, they review musicals, they review cabaret, straight plays, plays on Broadway, off Broadway. Basically, I've created different avenues. So when someone comes to me and says, I have this product, what do I need? I can refer them to my designer, because they have no artwork or they need to change their branding, which is huge. I don't think people realize how important it is to brand yourself and your product, because that's what we see. If I said to you Nike, the first thing you're going to remember is just do it. You're going to remember their logo. You're going to remember their slogan. McDonald's, everyone in my day, they said, you deserve a break today.
Yes.
But nowadays, everyone says, I'm loving it. Again, it's the branding. It's the slogan. It's the thing that makes people say, I want to go there and be part of it.
Yes.
So they advise them of branding. They advise them of what audience they wish to seek. They advise them of how to seek that audience. It's so much more involved, even on the level of off and off of Broadway. People think, oh, well, I have a 99-seat theater. I'm running 3 performances, and one of them's a Tuesday at 2 o'clock. Okay, that's even more important to have people, because, yes, Saturday night at 8 o'clock, you'll get people via foot traffic. Mm-hmm. How do you get that audience in there on the Wednesday matinee?
Yes.
That's where you need to increase your branding. That's where you need to say, okay, who's my core group? Who wants to see this show? Who is going to travel to see it? I deal a lot in genre work. I love my horror movies, my science fiction, my comic books, and things like that. And there are audiences that will travel across the globe to see a particular actor, to see a particular movie, to see a particular event. But they have to know about it. So where to place ads for that event, how to let that audience know who's at that event. It's quite huge. It is quite huge, no matter how small you think your product is. It's quite huge. And ironically, the smaller your product, the more you need branding, you need development, you need promotion, publicity, marketing. It's one thing. Okay, Hugh Jackman's on Broadway. Great. Okay, everyone knows he's Wolverine. We're all going to see Music Man. We don't care about Music Man. We're going to see him because he was an X-Man. That's wonderful.
Yes.
But when you're doing a show in a 99-seat theater on 10th Avenue, how do you get the proper audience there to fill the house and to keep your career going?
Yes. It's well said again. Absolutely. Do you work with nonprofits, by the way?
I cut my teeth with not-for-profit. A lot of my first jobs, I worked with the Joyce Theater. I worked with an international philanthropy for 15 years as a marketing executive. I've done a lot of work with nonprofits. The big trick with nonprofits, and there are many nonprofits who are going to hate me for saying this, there's no difference between a nonprofit and a profit corporation. Mm-hmm. All you're doing is selling humanity.
Mm-hmm.
A profit corporation is saying, wear my shirt, it'll make you look sexy. Mm-hmm. Go see my play because a movie star's in it. A non-for-profit is saying, please buy this shirt because you're going to help people overseas.
Mm-hmm.
Please go see my play because the message is so powerful. You're really selling some form of humanity. You're not just saying, see my play. You're saying, see this very powerful message done on stage.
Yes.
You're not saying, you know, wear my shirt. You're saying, this shirt was made by people who need your help. So it's the same thing. It's a commercial endeavor, but you're selling humanity.
Mm.
And underneath all of these nonprofits, that's what they need to do. They need to get their message out. The trick with a nonprofit is you have to have that balancing act. You have to have those commercial souls working with you, but you also have the artists there that make sure that message is powerful. You don't want to bring someone in to find out that you're disingenuous.
Yes.
You have to make sure that's a powerful, heartfelt message, and you got to have the right slogan to get people in the room.
You know, as you say all of this, and occasionally you reference the idea of all of this also needs money and investors, I wonder, how does one get on your list? I think you have a list, as a matter of fact, of stage plays seeking investment. I imagine everybody I've ever talked to wants to be on that list.
My greatest flaw is I believe my own hype.
Mm.
And I, when someone sends me a play, if its message is powerful, I'm suckered in.
Mm.
If it's a really engrossing story, if there's something so fascinating about, I'm suckered into it. So the easiest way is simply to contact me.
Yeah.
You can reach me via email, jmcomnet@gmail.com. That's jmcomnet@gmail.com. And send me, I read everything. So please feel free to send me something that says, I have this great play and it's about this great subject, and you'll love it. Chances are I will.
Okay.
So I love hearing anything. So the reason I have a huge list is because, like I said, I read something and I say, this is really important and I want to get involved. So there's no harm in contacting me regarding anything.
Fantastic. Before we go, though, and I'm glad you gave them contact information, tell us a bit about your YouTube channel. I mentioned in the intro, Channel I.
Channel I for independent.
Okay.
It's a YouTube channel and it is branching in other areas. I am connected to the Boston Science Fiction Channel. I'm connected to the FearCon Network in Arizona. My channel is starting to get a much broader reach, which I'm thrilled with. Basically what it is, there are some performances on there of particular projects that wanted their work seen on that level, but most of it is interviews with the artists. I take that channel as an opportunity to give the artists a platform to talk about their work and themselves. Their Zoom videos, their live interviews, etc., of the artists involved in many of the projects that I'm working on. Everyone from the actors to all the way up to the playwright and the producer, I give them a chance to really talk about their work, because I think that gives another dimension. When someone sees a play, it's wonderful, but for lack of a better term, okay, we all know the big stars. I want to make the big stars out of these people in these indie films and plays. Let everyone go to my channel, which is very accessible to do. It's basically JNC Channel I on YouTube, and they can see interviews with all of these artists that are in these projects. So they can get to know the playwright of a deeply moving play about someone who died of a debilitating disease, and they could see why they wrote that play. They can talk to the musician who created some rousing musical and what that story meant to them.
Mm.
It makes the show that much deeper for an audience to watch, and it gives a moment of validation, if you will, to the artist. They've worked so hard. The least we can do is give them 15 minutes, give them the Andy Warhol 15
yes.
on YouTube.
Excellent. That is terrific. All right, Jay. Your website one more time. Make certain everybody's got that. And, I guess this was the question I was going to ask you earlier that I forgot. Is there anything you're working on now? I know you can't mention them all, and I don't want to get anyone to feel like they got left out. But is there anything you're working on now that you'd like to plug, for lack of a better word, or tell us about? Tease us with?
I have an event at the Drama Bookstore. Doug DeVita, his play Fable, is going off Broadway, and we're doing a lecture with him at the Drama Bookstore on June 6. 10 days later, June 16, Roland Jewett's new play, Our Little Secret, premieres at Playwrights Horizons on 42nd Street, and I'm going to be directing that. Wonderful. Those are my two artistic endeavors. In terms of my clients, I am beyond grateful and thankful. I'm working with Ken Davenport's Theater Makers Group, and I have met some absolutely amazing playwrights, producers, directors, actors through his organization, and it's opened my company nationally. I have a project in Illinois that's opening very shortly. I have one in Miami that's running right now. I have another one in Atlanta. I have someone from San Francisco. It's amazing. It has shown me the breadth of theater around the country. Yes. And actually, since I have a client in Italy, in UK, and I just had one in Australia, it shows me the breadth of theater around the world. And so in terms of promotion, I couldn't thank Ken Davenport enough for connecting me with some amazing people. And I'm having just a blast. The only thing is, I failed math in college, and so all these time zone things are really killing me. Because, like, I'll tell someone, okay, I'll talk to you at 4 p.m., and they mean 4 p.m. their time and 4 p.m. my time, and that could be anywhere from 12 hours later.
Yes.
So my math skills need to be improved. But otherwise, it's really great. It's just really great. I have two artistic projects going right now, and I'm thrilled at the multitude of promotional events that I'm part of.
Absolutely. Wonderful, wonderful.
If people want to hear more, my website is jaymichaelsarts, jaymichaelsarts.com. That shows you a great deal of what's going on. Like I said, there's my email address. I'm on Facebook as Jay Michaels and Jay Michaels Communication. There's plenty of opportunity to see all that I'm having a blast with, and I can never have enough. So if someone has a project that they really want seen and heard, I would be thrilled to help them do just that.
All right. Well, this is grand. This has been terrific. Absolutely terrific, Jay. It's always a pleasure talking to you. And
same here.
Well, thank you, sir. I just think anyone hearing this program, especially in the business, or people who know people who are in the business, have learned so much. This is just, and it's so upbeat. It's always so positive and upbeat and inspiring, and you want to just go out and do it. So thank you. I can't thank you enough for being on the show. I really can't.
You're flattering me again. Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity.
Well, let's say it's mutual then. Although, don't go away when I say goodbye. I do want to chat with you about one thing. We have been talking to and listening to Dr. Jay Michaels, almost Dr. Jay Michaels, and all of the marvelous things that he has not only accomplished, but that he has helped other people accomplish in all of the arts. It's just an amazing range of influence. Thank you so very much for everyone for attending, and thank Jay Michaels, and remember how to get in touch with him and be appreciative. Thank you so much. All the best to you, Jay. Stick around for me if you will. Bye now.
Of course. Ciao.
Ciao. Hi. I'm Marcello Rolando, and as promised, Rolando and Dresner Productions is introducing its new musical, A Little Place Called Earth. It's a musical dramedy for our time, ringing in a hope that launches our new year with a strong upbeat, because the harmony we're looking for starts from within, even if there won't be any band. There won't be any band during our current pandemic situation, but there has been resounding applause for our essential workers, reinforcing our many front lines, realizing there won't be any band. 2020 life has been unexpected, but reconsidering our reception of differing points of view, we're making it. And although life on Earth has changed, we remain resilient, recapturing in Thanksgiving humanity's reunion, even without hugs. Visit us on Marcello Rolando's YouTube channel for more about A Little Place Called Earth. But first, get rejuvenated with There Won't Be Any Band, composed by Larry Dresner.
When I first fell in love, I knew a band was playing, from the sound of trumpets braying and the peals of screaming brass. When I first fell in love, I heard a mighty choir that set my soul on fire, like Bach's B minor mass. When next I fell in love, the sound lost its crescendo, it turned diminuendo, the horns filled up with mutes. Each time I fell in love, the more I heard rehearsals, or early tunes of Purcell's, little bells and minor lutes. There won't be any band, no fifes and bugles sounding, no kettle drummers pounding, no bass or concert grand. You'll take my hand to a peaceful life that's quiet. Perhaps you'd like to try it, and we won't need any band. Now if we fall in love, don't start expecting Mahler, or visits to Valhalla, or a bass that shakes the floor. Duet to a very simple score. So let's fall in love without thundering reprises, more like simple exercises with two-part harmony. We'll know we're in love, though drums and horns were splendid, but the overture has ended. It'll be just you and me.
Hello, I'm Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, thanking you for joining us and becoming one of the reasonable voices heard round the world. How, what, and why we celebrate shapes memories and creates legacies. Celebrating memories of the greatest generation and silent generation, formulating Americans both through the Great War and the Great Depression, lessons most didn't learn until experiencing 21st century food deserts, overpopulation, or suddenly, violently rendered parentless. Legacies of America's imbalanced balancing act between our presumptive domestic demands and shrinking global supply, however, didn't make the cut when descendants of the greatest and silent generations learned the wrong lessons, like Father Knows Best, believing everything you read in the papers, and sex exists for men and women only, to increase and multiply. I'd like to believe we've matured beyond such POVs, but have we? Not when continually celebrating myths, whitewashing memories, and building patriotic psychology on the shallow graves of crooked contingencies. Realizing post-Civil War generations were programmed with competing propaganda, we must confront the fallacy of personal historical comfort zones and unite to modernize our collective sense of balance between all life on Earth deviating from our home turf mirage. Unlike our 19th and 20th century national roots, we must wake up and smell the coffee before all the beans leave our mornings mourning over resume embellishing over-caffeinated politicians betraying the votes of we the people for more cream and sugar. Perhaps we need to emulate salesman Willie Loman less and imitate his wife Linda more, sharing her character's raison d'etre. Attention must be paid. Our 2023 gun violence versus real, rather than self-righteous pro-life rhetoric deserting children after birth. Real love of life, requiring an American legacy that both questions leaders we empower and why pro-life freedom is more freedom-worthy than the liberty of pro-choice. This gauntlet is not just for MAGA conservative Republicans and evangelical Christians imposing their beliefs, some violently, against abortions while turning the other cheek away from aging out. It's those who profit from AR-15 sales, which in a trigger-happy moment expose NRA's mockery of Second Amendment militia. Not all lies, violence, and mayhem started with our 45th president. Indeed, some financial institutions, corporations, and even some levels of government sense the future predicting glow of ATMs long before 9269, with the 1870 dawn's early light of the Second Industrial Revolution, arguably replacing blue-collar workers unable to transform rapidly into white-collar positions, while producing more children to fill near-slave positions for corporate elites. Thus a post-Lincoln America, full of self-importance, damning international reality, stumbled into World War I. Then, Nazi emulators, Dulles Brothers, twisted the Marshall Plan into the legacy of America's military-industrial complex. Here's where we started really ignoring ourselves to death. Bystanders watching the earth being raped repeatedly for coal, oil, gas, as if rehearsing 1945 Germans' alibi. We didn't know. Celebrating being deaf, dumb, and blind to the reality of January 6, 2021's congressional and judicial accomplices excuses the men behind the men who rent the men who shoot the guns to man up gun violence memories. Exactly. Into what legacy are MAGA mega donors remodeling the GOP, and why? How are 35% of America's civilians and military convinced that destroying American democracy is the only way to fulfill America's dream? Why is the default position of conservative patriotism domestic violence? Why is the right's firewall burning books, fear-mongering indoctrination, and stand back and stand by supremacists? Who's fueling funded increase to resurrect life seen on black and white TV reruns? Why did fake Trump electors attempt to aid and abet the 2021 assassination of an American election, including America's core value, Lady Liberty's promise? However, it isn't just white-collar corporate board members, white supremacists, and corporate supremes of any color that need us to inject moral fiber, basic honesty, and judicial prudence to recreate mindfulness of our Ellis Island legacy. It's the mesmerized masses thinking themselves American citizens who have long abandoned the necessary character traits that parent such a claim. Civic duty like voting. Resurrected honor and rejuvenated justice for all in a colorblind country embracing the unity that delivered us through Valley Forge, Pearl Harbor, 9/11, and our current 6 January 2021 Fort Sumter inspiration. Remember, diversely united, we protect America's best hope by ignoring all repetitious media hyperbole, by only voting for politicians with proven records for favoring saving planet Earth from our over-consumerism, by using UBI to reduce the risk of AI transforming white-collar employees into blue-collar workers, as climate change tempo literally gains ground, while we're still denying some lives on Earth are already losing the race for all life on Earth, by rejecting the sins of the fathers, imparted excesses claiming we built that, and eliminating habits which are destroying our children's children's habitat, by remembering while the greatest contributor to the declining health of Earth and Americans
We won't be alone in solutions the moment we let go of our overindulgences and welcome reason. I am Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, and I know where my voice belongs. I wish the same for you. Thank you, and join us. Become one of the Reasonable Voices heard round the world.
Thank you for continuing to listen to, support, and share the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio with family and friends, especially online. We enjoy hearing from you, and in response, yes, we are now accepting new company and business advertisers and welcoming organizations seeking to be one of our sponsors. So please do continue to email us at thereasonablevoice@gmail.com. However, if you prefer to simply make a donation, your donations are greatly appreciated and can be made through PayPal by clicking on the donate button found at the top of the homepage of the Reasonable Voice. Website.
Thank you for joining us today to make every day as reasonable as possible. We hope you will download and share our downloadable podcasts. I'm Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, hoping you will become one of the Reasonable Voices heard round the world.